Hello everyone, my name is Isaac Kurtz, and I'm excited to be studying Genesis 47, or Bereishit Mem Zayin, with all of you today. I will give a brief summary of the parak, and then discuss sort of two themes that are related, that I think come out of this parak. The first being sort of the role of government and a central government in a time of crisis, which we're about to see, or we have been seeing unfold. And the second, an idea more timely to this season, around the immortality of kings and sort of general kingship. So first, a summary of the parak, which this parak can really be divided into two sections. The first being Psukim 1 through 12, and the second one being Psukim 13 through 27. 1 through 12 is mostly a repeat of the previous parak, where Joseph tells his brothers about becoming shepherds in Goshen, except this is where it's played out in front of Paro, and he brings some of his brothers to approach Paro, debate over who those brothers are, and then there is the famous encounter between Paro and Yaakov, where Paro famously asks how old is his father, where Yaakov, of course, famously answers that he is, of course, 130 years old, and that these years have been me'at vera'im, few, and they have been bitter. There are many commentaries on this, and we'll return to this idea of why Paro asked him this, and sort of Yaakov's response later on. But then we move to the second half of the parak, which is new material that we're seeing, and this is sort of we're seeing Joseph's response to the famine and how he administered the land throughout the famine. And first we see in verse 12, Joseph taking care of his family, ensuring that his father and his brothers and his father's household is all taken care of. But then we see his response to the Egyptians. And this begins with him taking all of their wealth, and money for food, and then the following year, right, he moves on to their livestock. Right, so then Joseph takes their livestock in response for bread, and the following year, once again, the people are unfamished, and they offer up their land in response to bread, and they essentially become serfs to Pharaoh, right, or slaves to Pharaoh, avadim leparo, right, as we see. And of course, we see that Joseph makes an exception for the Kohanim, which of course we'll see in Shemot how this plays back. But the conclusion of all of this is Joseph's declaration to the Egyptian people, right? Kaniti adchem, I have acquired you, I have purchased you today. And Joseph seems to be, again, not just in charge of the government, but now in charge of all the people, which is a very powerful move by Joseph. And some could see a very controversial move by Joseph. And it's really around this acquiring of the people, acquiring of the land, acquiring of the wealth, and the setting up of the tax system that I want to focus in on, and to have us sort of think about what this says about the role of government, if this places Joseph in a positive light, or if this places Joseph in a negative light. And as always, right, we see commentators on both sides of the issue. There's sort of the real politic approach, right, for Joseph, that this is a time of famine, this is a time of national security, right? And Joseph had to do this so that the people would live, right? And while it might have been, not the best way of doing it, we see, right, in verse 25, that the people are very grateful, actually, for, right, becoming slaves, right? And they exclaim to Joseph that he has saved their lives, right? And he's this savior that comes in, right? An authoritative savior, but a savior nonetheless, who allows for the people of Egypt to make it through the famine. However, to the flip side of this, we see a lot of modern commentators actually going after Joseph for this practice, and we see that in a lot of ways it sows the seeds for the eventual enslavement of the Jewish people, right? Now, Paro is the owner of all the land, the people are no longer the owners of the land, right? As we mentioned earlier, the exception for Kohanim that Joseph made, similar to the exception that will be later made when the Jews are enslaved. And this sort of increasing levels of slavery is sort of in some ways paralleled in Shemot in the increasing levels of burden that are placed among B'nai Israel as they fall into enslavement. And a sort of minor detail to this, but I think sort of sheds some more light, is how The Midrash and the Gemara actually think about the wealth that Yosef acquired, which I know I hadn't thought about much before looking through this, but the Gemara in Pesachim, in 119a, actually sort of discusses how Korach was an inheritor of the wealth of Joseph and had found this key that Joseph hid to a treasure, and that because of the wealth of Korach, that he acquired from Yosef, he rebelled against Moshe, right? And it's this idea of wealth and leadership, right? How sort of the wealth that Yosef had acquired in this time of need is then reused later on by Korach to sort of challenge the leadership of the Jewish people, right? And I think it really brings out sort of this question of what is the role of leadership, right? What is a good leader? Is a good leader one who, in some ways, ensures the survival of their people at all costs? Or is there some way to create a more egalitarian, fair society through leadership? And there's no explicit criticism of Yosef right here in the Tanakh, and it doesn't seem explicitly that this plan backfires, right? Again, people are happy. But it really brings into a question sort of the role of a highly centralized government, and especially the role of a highly centralized government in a time of crisis, and sort of how Joseph's reaction is an appropriate reaction or an inappropriate reaction. And I think moving on to this second theme of the mortality of kings, right? Especially relevant around Yom Kippur, around Rosh Hashanah, right? As we're crowning God as our king, right? It really brings into contrast kingship of God versus kingship of man, right? And there's, of course, the famous piyut, Melech Elyon versus Melech Evyon, right? Which really draws out these differences between God, who are crowning as sort of this eternal God of the heavens, and really centralizing this around Rosh Hashanah and around Yom Kippur, and Melech Evyon, right? The king of dirt, of stone, the king of dust, right? Who is this lower God, right? Sort of this human kingship, right? And we see this, we can see this in some ways with Joseph. We can see this also sort of in Pharaoh's interaction with Jacob at the beginning of the Perek, and where Paro asks of Jacob, Kama yemei shanecha chayecha, right? How many are the years of your life? And the commentators note that, right, this question came because Paro saw the age of Yaakov, right? And in some ways, if we think of this, he saw the mortality of Yaakov. But he saw, through the mortality of Yaakov, the mortality of himself, right? And he saw that he would not be a king forever, right? And, you know, Yaakov's sort of response of the bitterness of his life is sort of like almost a contrast to the way Paro sees himself, right? And although Yaakov is, again, criticized for this response, I think it, again, brings out this important contrast between Melech Elyon and Melech Evyon, right? And who are, and who is sort of the king that we see as above, right? And how do we see God, and how do we see God in relation to human kings, right? And human kings are more, who are mortal, right? Who make mistakes and who have flaws. So thank you very much, and a Gemar v'chatima tova to everyone here.